Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen. If you haven't already, we are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, the rain is a call. Fast and Fingers,
Stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for May 23rd, 2023. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on the Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever. But we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside, as always, Case Slow. And Case, as we tend to do this, I just want to get this out front first. Game 3 is about to happen. Stars versus Knights. Who do you got?
I'm going to continue riding the wave of the Golden Knights. I enjoy this team. Historically, since they've only existed for like 5 years, I've always enjoyed this team. I think they're going up 3-0 here.
Disgusting. The only correct choice is the Dallas Stars on home ice, getting closer back to it. As a longtime Dallas Stars defender, I'm sickened by this. What did L. Bell Ford do to you?
I don't know. Nothing. Can I throw another impromptu topic your way as a fair warning for people? We're going to take a minute to get to the Dragon Gate here. Not a lot of positive thoughts to go around in this podcast. Can I throw a different topic your way now that we've done our 30 seconds of ice hockey talk?
All right, we've satisfied our Toronto overlords. What do you got?
Are you caught up on, not HBO's, but Max's hit series, Barry?
My man, I this has been one of the most insane, like I think the season of Barry is up there. Like, it is incredible the swings that they have taken and landed on a series that we've been talking about, Case, kind of ever since Barry really came about, that this is one of the more courageous shows of willing to do things. And, you know, sorry for folks that are letting Barry stack up here. We're going to talk spoilers about this for a while. The time jump and how they managed to pull it off alongside everything that happened right leading up to it and just leaving us, not letting us see the aftermath, I thought was really brilliant.
So to use your verbiage of up there, you know, I thought season one was up there. Season one was so good that I was like, God, I hope they don't do a season two because I don't think they can follow up. And then I thought season two was even better. And then season three was better than season two. And we're now in this hellish vortex known as season four. We have one episode left. And it has been, because I did not watch The Sopranos in real time. I have not seen Breaking Bad. I am not a dork. I did not watch Game of Thrones. Watching Barry from start to finish in real time has been the most rewarding experience of my life as a television viewer. This is a Pantheon S-tier 1A, write the new TV, the book, and put Barry as high in the accolades as you possibly can.
And it's something that, you know, each season I feel like that there's a different actor on the show that I'm drawn towards for that season. Yeah. The first one's NoHo Hank in season one, right? I mean, Anthony Carrigan was a force of nature, you know, just coming out of this. And then when you got into season two, that was when we were getting into the weirdness of Gene a little
bit. For sure.
That was this. Season three was kind of the Fuchs show in a way.
Interesting. I'm curious to see where you're at on season four then.
The most fascinating character this year, and especially since the time jump, is Sally.
Okay, yes. So I think I enjoy so much of Sally's season three work, but that I would give her that season and I would shift season four's focus to Fuchs, because I was talking to a friend over the weekend about like his entire show arc of just flipping at a moment's notice and siding with whoever needs his help at that second has been so entertaining, and I'm so glad that is where we're at in this show. But Sally in season four, the depth that she has gone to, Open the Voice Gate, famously a non-horny show, but Sally with dark hair unlocking something I didn't know I wanted, it has all been perfect. Absolutely not hyperbole, perfect with her.
Case, when I relaunch DGUSA with Ho Ho, when we get this all going, I'm going to make sure that there's going to be a show in the Metroplex. Of course, you know, Spears Territory is back live again, and you're going to come down to that, and I'm going to make sure that you can go and get your fill of the diner waitress, because I feel like that this is happening into something.
Oh my God. I mean, look, it's I enjoy to steal a line from Everlast. I enjoy some white trash. Beautiful. Now I'm, of course, happily linked up at this point. Mike and I were talking off the air about, you know, Kobe World has famously over the last few years, Kobe World's been very inconvenient for me with my work schedule. It's always during one of the busiest weekends of the year because it coincides with Lollapalooza, which I have to deal with my shoot job. And this year, Lollapalooza was moved back a week into August and Kobe World was moved up. And then I was looking at my calendar and I was like, son of a bitch, I am on the road Kobe World weekend again, this time visiting my girlfriend's hometown. So I don't know if I'm at a stage in life where I can take you up on said diner waitresses, but 1,000,000% absolutely something that if circumstances were different, I could see myself making many terrible mistakes in that environment.
It's something with Kobe World. Like, not only did somehow it get changed to much earlier in July that you were going to be out of town, it's the morning after my birthday.
It's every year without fail. It is the most inconvenient weekend in July. Whatever that may be, for whatever reason, is always like, oh, that's World Weekend? Why? Why this weekend?
Yeah, no, and it's something that it's always in July, but I just feel like somehow in the middle of the summer, as the Vegas Knights already are making me pay.
I was just about to say, by the way, Knights up 1-0.
Right now. Yeah, a minute 11 in the first period. It's something that I just feel like that July is such a packed month. Maybe.
It's Suns Out Guns Out month. It's Japanese wrestling, not the focus. It's Suns Out Guns Out.
Yeah, no. Not to go completely on Barry, but one of the things about that time skip, you brought up Fuchs and his propensity to flip on everyone. He is left in a state before the time skip where there's no one there for him. And he comes out the Raven. And
the relationship he has with, I guess it's his wife and stepdaughter. Is that the relationship with the two women he has?
Not clarified. Yeah, not clarified.
Just kind of like I make a point. I watch Barry live as it airs. I put my phone down. It's the one show that I make an effort to pay attention to. And I'm not totally sure where those women came from.
No, and I don't suspect over the last hour of Barry that's going to be... I don't think that we're going to get a nice, like, bow tied on by Bill Hader and Alec Berg here about this thing. And I don't... And to be honest, I'm kind of glad that we don't, because we're now left now with one episode left, and every basically card is on the table here, and they've set this up to be a fascinating finale.
So
to say that
before I get your finale prediction, because I was talking to a coworker today, and I think he laid out what is going to happen, but I do want to ask, is your significant other a Barry viewer?
No, she is not.
Okay, has she ever seen the show?
She has heard me talk about it a lot, but with the caveat of I don't even try to be like, hey, babe, do you want to like do a watcher of Barry because the finale week is or the finale season is coming up? I knew immediately this is not her thing.
Okay.
This is not her thing.
So rookie mistake on my end. I'm over at my significant other's place. I had a 3-day weekend a few weeks ago. So I was staying the night on a Sunday into a Monday, and I go, well, you know, I'm here, you know, let's take a pause from rewatching Modern Family. Let me throw on a new episode of Barry. And all she knows is Bill Hader. She's like, all right, you know, give it a shot, whatever. And it is the episode in which the sand drowning takes place in. And
right. So right before the time skip and the heaviest episode of the season.
Heaviest episode of the season. The brutal execution at the end of the episode done by NoHo Hank, or I guess with NoHo Hank bearing witness. And we get through this enthralling episode of television. I mean, for people like you and I that have followed this journey for four seasons, the twists and turns that it took, I was almost pulling my hair out just going like, what? That normally Barry gets me with a twist at the end. This was a twist every scene that I didn't see coming. And the episode concludes and I roll over and I go, what do you think? And she just looks at me with this sulked look and goes, why did you make me watch that? That was awful. Why did you do that? Like, oh, you know, I like the show. So we'll be with Memorial Day weekend being on tap. We'll be in that same position where I'll be watching the finale at her place, and she might even just hop to another room this time. So finale of Barry this weekend. Give me your thoughts. How does this show end?
Well, I think at the very least, there is no saving Sally and John. I feel like John's life is over.
Wow.
Not physically, but the house of cards that Barry has constructed is going to completely fall apart because Sally, drivenly unhappy, understandably so, for the last 8 years, and having an alcohol episode, a hallucination as becoming an alcoholic has been like the big thing for her coping with this, takes their son that is basically, would you say John's a hostage, basically an unknowing hostage
in the current situation that they're in the most recent episode? Yes.
Yeah. So but I would say his life is as an unwilling but unknowing hostage.
That's probably true, as a hostage to Barry's redemption arc.
Yeah. So I just think that NoHo Hank is going to try to use this, is going to use Sally and John as pawns at this point.
Can I throw a scenario at you?
Okay.
This is, I can't take credit for this. This is one my coworker threw my way this morning. I think he's onto something. With the way the last episode ended, and again, spoiler, skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it, I think NoHo Hank is recruiting Barry to kill Fuchs.
Yeah, because Hank just wants to get back to his normal.
Yeah, like, and I think there's a very good chance that there's a good chance that everybody ends up dead, with maybe, I think Sally could kill off Barry in this finale, but I think the driving force of the episode is NoHo Hank recruiting Barry one last time to kill Fuchs, and then maybe Barry kills Hank and then Sally kills Barry. I think that's a very realistic possibility.
So, I, as we're saying this, Gene's completely pulled out of the scenario here.
Other than maybe a prison scene, I don't expect Gene to be in the finale all that much. I think they perfectly wrapped up his character by tying him into crimes he had nothing to do with. I thought that was the perfect send-off for him.
Yeah, I guess, like, do you think that that movie is real that they were doing? Or was this all set up as the Sting for him? Because that's what I'm wondering.
Well, I think because it drove Barry back to California, it's in Barry's life, not just Gene's, that the movie exists in some form or fashion in this universe.
Yeah, no, that is... Yeah, because that is the action there. Is there a bit of you that thinks that final scene can be Gene in his cell and they open it up and then there's Barry?
Oh, that's good too. How are they going to tie all of this up? Like, that's what I don't get.
It's insane.
Even going into the season, forget the twists and turns that have happened in every episode. Just going into the season, it's like, wait, what are they gonna do? Like, I don't understand. It's the most rewarding experience I've ever had as a viewer.
So what Case is alluding to, because we're just going to spoil cast this, I guess, is that Barry is arrested and is put into federal jail. Like, they've got him and they say that there's one last season left, and it's like, what are you going to do? And then 4 or 5 episodes in, a miscalled hit on Barry by NoHo Hank and Cristobal, and he picks up a gun, walks out, and it's like, of course Barry just walks out of prison. Of course he does.
Yeah, it makes sense within the context of the show. The huge talking point during the press run in season one, and even a little bit in season two, was like, Bill Hader's playing a hitman, but it's not corny. It sounds corny, but it's not. And they've not only flown past that talking point, but now even when there's things like, oh, he just got out of prison, it makes sense within the context of the show. I don't bat an eye at it.
Yeah, and I have to say, the little bit of stunt casting of Fred Armisen in that scene was pretty
genius. Five-star cameo. It's just, the show has hit on every beat I've ever wanted it to. I have no doubt they will stick the landing. It's just a matter of, you know, of the million different directions they could go, what direction will they go?
Yep, and speaking of directions and hitting every beat, not necessarily having that in Dragon Gate, we basically killed 15 minutes because it's time to talk about Hokkaido making sense of this week. In case it's was something that I was interested in seeing how this week would go without the auspices of King of Gate being around it and helping the cards, and boy, I hope they have good ideas for whatever King of Gate will be this year, because this show felt pretty useless, or this weekend felt pretty useless without King of Gate around.
The only direction Dragon Gate went on this trio of shows was they dug their heads straight into the ground. Let me ask you a series of yes or no questions, if you're okay with that, Mike.
Yeah, sure thing. Let's do it.
All right. This weekend in Hokkaido, did these shows help build anything for the upcoming Osaka show this weekend?
I would have to say, given what all we have booked for Osaka this weekend, not really at all.
Did these shows in Hokkaido help build anything towards the upcoming Cork and Hall doubleheader, by the way, 2-0 nights? Did this series of shows this weekend in Hokkaido, did they help build anything towards the upcoming Cork and Hall doubleheader in June?
The most that I could say, Case, is they've kept Susumu and Kanda looking strong going into that Twin Gate match.
Sure. Final question. Go ahead.
But I mean that is solely because they picked up clean wins, whereas there was all kinds of shenanigans afoot throughout these cards.
Very much so. Did this series of shows, 6 weeks out from the biggest show of the year, after last year, which was a box office failure, they need to have a lot of help this year to put some people in that building, a few thousand people. Did these shows help build anything towards Kobe World?
Unless they are doing something with Benkei and Kota Minora, which I do have kind of a pie in the sky, just 1% chance shot idea coming out of this weekend, I would have to say absolutely not whatsoever. Maybe getting the Triangle Gates off Gold Class helped clean up what their plans are going to be for July. But there was nothing, there was no feuds moving along. But Case, there's also, if we really want to look at it, the biggest feud that is currently going in the promotion, they weren't going to have any sort of plot step with it because there's no reason for Ultimo Dragon to break out and do this here versus wherever they're going to set the Apuesta match at.
And that is a flaw in Dragon Gate right now, that your biggest feud, no matter how much you and I might be into it, and we spent all of last week praising it, talking about how great this is, such a great angle for Dragon Gate, good for Ultimo, he's involved in something that people are going to care about. Diamante versus Ultimo Dragon cannot be not only your biggest feud, right now, your only feud. We cannot be in that scenario 6 weeks out from Kobe World.
Right, because it's not even like Shun was picking on Strong Machine J building off of the Reiwa Big Six angle at Korakuen, right? Like, yeah, Strong Machine J suffered losses in matches with Shun Skywalker, but that wasn't at all within the matches.
Yeah, look, if they book Shun versus Strong Machine J for World, which I think is a realistic possibility, okay, great. But they did the heavy lifting to at least get that started weeks before this. This weekend, yes, they wrestled one another. And, full disclosure, I loved the main event of the final show. I went 4 stars on all of the main events, or at least 4 stars, 3 nothing nights, by the way. I went at least 4 stars on all of the main events on this weekend shows. But they were completely useless. I mean, to go back to the questions I asked you, I would say it didn't do anything for Osaka. It didn't do anything for Cork. And outside of, again, maybe you could give them credit for Susumu versus Kanda. And man, unless they really pulled the wool over my eyes and this is something that will make sense 6 weeks from now, I don't think they did anything to establish a Kobe World main event, a semi-main event for Kobe World, a match on Kobe World. I think these were 3 sets of shows that just existed. And quite frankly, they wasted our time.
And I do have a tangent I want to get you on in a second about something you just said, but there is an aspect to this weekend that for Dragon Gate has to be talked about. This is a weekend of which there's fan club tours going up there. This is a weekend. The reason why they run 3 shows is because that's how they are able to make money doing the Hokkaido trip. Like, it does not make it a pleasant experience for the viewers at home, but this weekend, along with Okinawa, frankly, are the stops that when they happen, you just sit back and you go like, well, these aren't really for us, and it sucks.
Can I talk about the attendance real quick?
Yep, let's do that.
Okay, so they're running this building in Hokkaido that is not an aesthetically pleasing building by any means. It's the Sapporo, would you pronounce that 2-1 stadium?
Ione is how I'm choosing.
Okay, all right.
Because
I assume Roman numerals soccer. And I now see that I was incorrect. Thank you for correcting me.
I mean, Spazio is advertising. Spazio. So I'm choosing to say it that way. That's how I'm choosing to interpret it. I'm probably way off here, but at least in my mind canon, it makes me think we're going to have an Italian connection revival. That was something that this weekend could have very much used.
Oh, my God, absolutely. So anyways, the building in Hokkaido that they run, you've seen it by now. You know what it is. I like this building for the context of this discussion because they've been running this building since December of 2020. It's really only existed in the pandemic universe and now beyond. This is the first cheering shows we've gotten in Hokkaido since 2019, which is crazy to think. So what I did, because like Mike mentioned, they run 3 sets of shows here twice a year. I went ahead, I looked at the attendances, and I took the average attendance of the weekend from December of 2020 through now. Do you want to hear those attendance numbers?
Sure.
Okay, so December of 2020, this was highlighted by what was really the first weekend with Masquerade existing, even though they weren't officially Masquerade yet. 3 shows, average attendance, 259 fans. They come back in May of 2021 with a King of Gate lineup that has no Naruki Doi and no Benkei because they are out with COVID, but nevertheless, King of Gate 2021, they averaged 270 fans. A year later, or I'm sorry, 6 months later, December of 2021, mainly a show with a big Triangle Gate match, Eita, Hyo, and Kaito Ishida versus Big Boss Shimizu, KZ, and UT that headlines the final night, and they jump up to an average of 325 fans. They return in May, another King of Gate lineup. This one, famously the KZ versus Coach Minora match to round out the weekend. And it goes up again, 341 fans. In December of 2022, they run the three title matches to headline the weekend, the Twin Gate match on the second, the Triangle Gate match on the third, and another Twin Gate match on the fourth. Those three shows, average attendance, 387 fans. They continue to rise time after time after time, and then they come into this weekend, average attendance, 338 fans. Not only a dip from December, but a slight dip by three fans, so we can call it flat if you want to, year over year. And I don't think that is a reflection of Madoka Kakuta. I don't think that's a reflection of guys not being over. I think it was a reflection of, on paper, this weekend wasted everybody's times. And the one argument you can make of the positive of this Triple Shot in Hokkaido was, well, they raised La Estrella's profile. And even then, I would have to argue as to whether or not that's a positive or a negative. That was the big takeaway from these shows, and it shows in the attendance that this isn't like a Stardom thing where they booked three title matches and I was told that it was a show that actually didn't matter. These were shows that on paper looked bad, and the box office proves that in the actual results.
And I wonder with some of that is, so the big thing about these weekends, and it's been patently clear if you watch these shows over the last 3 years, is that these shows are about BB Hulk and KZ.
They
right?
beat you over the head with it unmercilessly.
And it's something that, you know, BB Hulk, original Big Six. KZ, incredibly popular local hometown guy. It's hard to get to Hokkaido. You can't really do, like, one day as a part of your Sendai loop. It doesn't work that way. You have to kind of do it that way. So you make a whole weekend out of that. That makes sense in 2020. That definitely makes sense beforehand, like 2019. 2023, it's the generation shift that's happened. It is something that I am glad that they were able to do BB Hulk versus KZ night one in front of hometown fans. But this might, I don't know if doing six shows a year in Sapporo as hometown things makes sense going forward.
I am so over BB Hulk being pushed on this weekend specifically. And look, he wasn't bad. Like, BB Hulk at the Notebook twice this weekend. I can't knock him too much, but it was just, it was so in your face. It was like the WWE subtlety hammer when they don't have the ability to do anything subtle. It's that in Sapporo, Hokkaido with BB Hulk. It's just like he's not a main eventer anymore. And we, for some reason, this weekend and in 1 weekend in December, he's the guy. You'd think it's the BB Hulk promotion. And I don't feel like for a promotion that acknowledges hometowns better than any other wrestling company in the world, I don't feel like they are this extreme in any other market.
No, they're not. And it's something that, so I went Notebook night two, main event. I thought that was an excellent Triangle Gate match. Night three, the three-way, really finished hot, got it over the line for me, 4 stars there. I was only 3.5 on KZ versus BB Hulk night one. And you know what it was? You know what really knocked this match for me?
What was that?
Hulk can't do it.
You know, it was...
He was hands and knees like 6 minutes into the match.
Yeah, look, I mean, the same thing happened with Yamato versus Hulk for the Dreamgate belt 2 years ago. I mean, I think the BB Hulk experiment in Gold Class has worked out far better than anybody thought, because when he turned, and that was in January, I said, okay, well, they'll get mileage out of this through Champion Gate. They'll get 2 months of, hey, this is fun, new combination, new unit, fresh coat of paint, and then after that, I'm sure I'll be sick of it. And quite frankly, I'm still not sick of it. Hulk and Gold Class, really more so from an in-ring perspective than an aesthetics perspective, which I was expecting it to be the opposite, but Hulk in the ring works with these guys. I think he has value in multi-man matches still. I think even as a tag team wrestler, he can be fine. KZ versus BB Hulk, I awarded 4 stars to, and awarded is the term I'll use. It was effort. I did think they worked their asses off. I appreciated that. I marveled at some of the spots down the stretch and how hard they were hitting each other, how hard they were going. it was not a four-star match that I loved necessarily, but it was kind of one at the end where I went, well, yeah, you know what? I got to hand it to them. They worked really hard here.
Yeah, and it's just something that for me, I just, and I said this during Yamato MVP Hulk case, recognizing where he is in their unwillingness to recognize his limitations is only exposing it. And it's something that he's great in gold class, as you said. Having him as a third or a tag team wrestler, he is still great at that. But it is something that when attendance is down, as you laid out, and as you look at how Hulk is and how the company is going, and I don't know if the company can justify too much doing these weekends like that anymore.
I can't offer an opinion there. I'm not really sure. At the very least, it's a market that still you have to go there because KZ is from there. It's a market that not a lot of other companies hit, and that is in favor of Dragon Gate, as we've seen with the influx of trainees coming from small towns all over the country. They come to Dragon Gate because Dragon Gate came to them. I still think it's valuable there. I am ready for a new direction on these shows, though, and whether that's in December, again, removing BB Hulk from the equation. If they go back to a May King of Gate next year, I would prefer Hulk not be in any of the main events because, look, we talked about it with, what was that, Gate of Destiny? Was that the show that he and Yamato headlined, or was it Dangerous Gate? Do you remember?
It was Gate of Destiny because it was Minoru at Dangerous
Gate.
That's
right. So Gate of Destiny attendance was down, disappointing number. Here, again, this is a weekend that largely built around BB Hulk, and a lot of these shows have been. The only feather in his cap that he has is the final December show from last year, December 4th, 2022. They did 451 fans for Hulk and Kai versus KZ in Shimizu, and that is to date the highest attendance that has been put in this building, I think, for any company, because I know Dragon Gate runs here, I know Gleet runs here, I don't know if anybody else does, but 451, to my knowledge, is the high mark. And great, but that also had KZ. And if you look, if you compare the two, the shows that have a Hulk main event and the shows that have a KZ main event, KZ outdraws this man 10 times out of 10 times. So it's important to contextualize it as like, you know, hey, maybe you're not into the new generation of Dragon Gate wrestlers that much, but at the box office, they are showing that BB Hulk is not a draw and that, you know, his generation of wrestlers, I guess at this point it's him and Yamato, so it's really Hulk that takes the brunt of this blame, not doing it in the box office. This weekend, for whatever reason, I think because these shows were just so pointless, as we continue to kind of hammer that point home, the presence of BB Hulk was just a lot.
It was just kind of ever-present with that case. And so Gleet does run here, and that is something we wanted to touch on. They ran, I think it was a week before, 2 weeks before, it was G Pro Volume 52, right?
Volume 52, yes. It was the Sunday before, May 14th.
Yeah, so Gleet outdraws Dragon Gate here.
And to be clear, Gleet did 278 fans for that show, which was headlined by a G-Rex title match, T-Hawk versus our boy Chek Shimatani, and that outdrew specifically the first show of this weekend. Gleet did 278, Dragon Gate did 256 with Hulk versus KZ on top.
Yeah, and there's a reason why Gleet goes to Sapporo, and it's something that has to be mentioned. It's T-Hawk's hometown. This used to be, the point I'm making here is that Sapporo used to be a very important stop that you could justify having 3 or 4 days in because you had a concentration of guys that it just makes sense you could do 3 hometown shows with. So, of course, Shima's going to do that. And you have him in his hometown doing his title defense. So I would hope that it outdraws in that context the first night.
Do you think, and I think I know where you stand on this, but I have to ask you anyways, do you think that means anything that Gleet outdrew Dragon Gate by 20-something fans in this building? Or is this just one of those where Dragon Gate goes, well, that sucks, and then they move on with their life?
I think everyone else moves on who understands context.
Okay. I'm with you. I don't look at it as a sign of the apocalypse or a sign that it even means anything. I just think it's worth noting.
Yeah, if this was something where they walked into Kobe Assembly Hall and did Noah's supposed number, that's a discussion.
Can we talk about that for a second? I don't believe for a fucking second that Noah did 831 fans in Kobe Assembly Hall. New Japan just claimed like 1,200, and even that I'm a little dubious of, because during it at their peak, I don't believe was drawing 1,000 fans to that building. I don't believe for a second that Noah drew 800 fans anywhere.
Yeah, like the one thing that like puts out, so when that New Japan number happened, I was asked by a friend, like, what do you know about this building? Because I know Dragon Gate does not approach that number, and found the booking website for Kobe Sambo Hall case. And it's an expandable room, but I can't tell if that's noise or something. And with Noah's attendance, there's enough red flags there for me for that number to draw my interest.
Yeah, I don't see it on Wrestle Universe, which is frustrating. But if you look at the card, I mean, main event is Kano and Soya versus Kano and Suwama for the All Japan Tag Belts. Look. Nice little match. I'd like to watch it. Do I think it drew 891 fans to a building in a city that Noah, I don't believe, has historically ever done well in? No, I do not.
Nope, that's entirely fair. Should we talk about my crazy tangent now or
no?
Later?
Give it to me now.
I had one big takeaway from this weekend that this is my 1% one, my honest opinion on what happens in Kobe World at this point. Yoshioka versus Kakuta makes as much sense as you've laid out as anything. My second thing, do you think they might six-way it?
Ugh, I don't want that.
It looks like that you have now Strong Machine J and Shun. You have Shun probably, there's an argument made that they might want to run that back. Shun,
okay,
Kakuta,
let me stop you there. That was my takeaway coming out of this weekend, was are you sure we just don't do Shun versus Kakuta again? Because that I would be okay with that.
Yeah, like that was a thing that I was noticing, or I was feeling, was like the big six idea was just like, okay, there you have your nice like stamp, like not only is this the new generation on top here, and you have people like Kota Minoru, Benkei, Shun Skywalker that have done Kobe Worlds before, so it's not as weak as it appears on paper to have Strong Machine J suddenly main event in Kobe World. But Shun Kakuta 3 just seems like that it might be a case of us just all overthinking it, and it's just like, yeah, no, just run it back. Dude, run it back here. You could string this out for another 6 weeks.
You know, I know they wrestled for 25 minutes at Dead or Alive and put forth an epic main event that is my Dragon Gate match of the year and one of the five best matches I've seen in 2023. But I watched the interactions they had on this weekend, and I thought, they still have more of the tank. They could run this back and come up with plenty more ideas, plenty more counters, plenty more intrigue. I would be okay with that. I still think Kakuta versus Yoshioka is the most exciting option, but if we leave Korakuen, and I emphasize Korakuen because I am strongly of the belief, despite the fact that they're in Kobe Sambo Hall the week after Korakuen, I want to leave Tokyo knowing what the Kobe World main event is. I think that's really important, that with the most eyeballs on your product, with the exception of a Big Five show, that you're signing the main event in that building. If it just happens to be Shun Shun versus Kakuta again, okay, I'm on board. Let's do the round three. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, and there seems to still be enough there that Shun can make a challenge, right?
Like, I think so. It takes one pinfall and a. In a multi-man match. Now, of course, Dragon Gate has done themselves no favors looking at this Osaka card, and it's D-Courage versus Gold Class, which, you know, look, maybe you will be the one with the crystal ball, and it's something with Benkei and or Minoru, but I looked at that main event, D-Courage versus Minoru, Benkei and BB Hulk, and I was like, ugh, what, that doesn't do anybody any favors. Why is that the main event? It feels all so random right now.
Yeah, and it does it do anything to stoke the Minoru fear?
Fear is not the right word. They just I mean, look, I left Cork and Hall. I talked about this in depth. I thought Minoru was the least impressive of the six guys in the Generations tag, whereas, you know, you have Kakuta as your top dog. You have Skywalker, who is still a 1A player in Dragon Gate. Strong Machine J has a story. He's climbing up the ranks. Yuki Yoshioka is in an incredibly interesting position where he's lost a bunch this year. He's no longer the top guy in his unit. There's reasons for him to be angry. There's reasons for him to side-eye Madoka Kakuta. That's all there. You know, Ben K has cooled off from last year, and Coach Minora, again, sixth most interesting guy in a group of six people. I would really have to see a Herculean effort to get either of them into a position where I go, okay, they can headline Kobe World and I feel good about it, both from just a story standpoint and, of course, from the box office as well.
Yeah, I look at this there and we're talking about, okay, things are so muddied in that division that other than Hulk, I look at that Osaka main event and it's like, oh, you know, Ben Spears Kakuta out of his shoes, pens him and goes chicky chicky and there we go.
But by that same token, can somebody explain to me what happened with Big Boss Shimizu? Is he not challenging for the Dreamgate? Like, I don't get that. I thought certainly it would be Vibes versus D-Courage in Osaka. Shimizu shot put slams. If you want to make a Dragon Dia, great. If you want to make it Yoshioka, great. It could be Kakuta, great. And then they set up the main event for Cork and Hall there, but he's just in the semi-main against Zebrats. Did Big Boss Shimizu not make it known that he wants to challenge for the Dreamgate belt? He's not headlining Kobe World.
Yeah, and it's something where maybe it's because Hokkaido three shows, nothing happened, was that they knew what kind of weekend it is that they just decided that we revisit this in Osaka. Like, that's the only thing that makes sense to me about Shimizu's position right now, or given the last few weeks. Like, Shimizu, them figuring three shows doesn't matter, let's move on and deal with it in a town that we haven't run in a couple
months.
But
that's terrible logic, because look at what Shimizu, again, I'm not crazy, right? He ended Cork and Hall cutting a promo, making it seem like he was challenging the entire Generation, and specifically, just by wrestling logic, he was going to wrestle for the Dreamgate belt. That happened, right?
Nope. That definitely was the last thing that happened in a Dragon Gate ring in Tokyo.
Okay, so first show, he's in a six-man with M3K, and then it's him, Strong Machine J, and UT. And with all due respect to M3K, this happened last year. Junior got hurt in June. He got hurt right after his debut, and it just became three old guys doing things again. And holy shit, does this unit lose a lot when Mochizuki Jr. is not there. So you have a nothing six-man tag. You have the main event of the second show where, yes, Shimizu wins the Triangle Gate belts. Great, it's against Gold Class, so it doesn't really do anything in terms of him possibly challenging for the Dream Gate. And then you have this main event where he's in the ring on the final show with D Courage. He's wrestling Kakuta. Their interactions are great. Shimizu, I thought, was taking that match more seriously than he normally does. He actually looked like the killer that he used to be. And then Strong Machine J is the one that's pinned. And I'm not sure where we go from here. I'm not sure what happens to Ryo Saito from May through July that makes him lose all drive and focus, but we're now entering a position where we were in last year. Granted, we don't have the albatross that was Coach Minora hanging over our heads yet, but we're still in this position where we're 6 weeks away from the biggest show of the year, and we're doing shows just to have shows.
And that is an issue of not having King of Gate here. Because of scheduling and all of this, that if you have King of Gate here, you're building ultimately to, more often than not, the person who's going to be in the main event across from the Dreamgate champion. And you don't have that. And
But can't one of these shows, I guess it would be the first show, instead of doing a pointless Hulk versus KZ match, which did not draw, so you can't even say, well, it's the hometown, because it didn't mean anything to the hometown. Can you not do, you know, KZ, Shimizu, and UT, get the hometown guy in the main event, get Shimizu in the main event, and do them versus D-Courage? Can we not at least build to something? Again, I ask you, what did this weekend build to? It was a showcase for La Estrella, and he's going back to Mexico.
It really makes us wonder. It really does. Case, I actually have someone at the door right now. Do you mind if I'll leave it recording?
Yeah,
I'll be right
pause.
Back.
Today's podcast is brought to you by the BetStamp app, which is helping thousands of people win at sports betting for free. The same way travelers use Google Flights or Expedia to find the best prices, bettors can now use BetStamp to do the same. When you place a bet, the odds given by a sportsbook will determine how much you can possibly win. Even when betting on the same outcome, different sportsbooks will offer varying payouts, and these differences can be huge. Thankfully, BetStamp allows you to easily line shop for the most profitable odds across all sportsbooks. You can click on any matchup and instantly see all the different odds for game lines, player props, and even future bets. Line shopping is the simplest way to find an edge in sports betting and maximize your chances of winning long term. On average, BetStamp users win an extra $1,000 yearly just by line shopping. You can find the BetStamp app on Apple iOS Store, Google Play Store, or through your browser at betstamp.app. To access all these benefits, sign up by using promo code VOW and start your journey to successful sports betting today. If you forget to use the code upon sign up, you can always enter our code in your BetStamp account settings afterwards. Check it out.
Yeah, okay, sorry about that. Katsuo came by.
By the way, Katsuo, I know he was just in Hakudate because the show after the Hokkaido shows that didn't draw all that well, 356 fans in Hakudate Arena, super no vacancy.
Yeah, and wouldn't you know it, Katsuo, of course, DG Trueborn, he was fourth out of the dojo after Tozawa, but before Yamato. It is from Hakodate, and he wrestles in that area, and they put him on the YouTube case, and my God, did that guy get an ovation coming in.
Very much so. It has become a fun yearly tradition over the last 2 years of seeing him pop up on one random YouTube show and then going away for another year.
It's pretty much like the perfect Katsuo Yuki Ono exposure, I would say. Like, we got a lot of him. We just need a little bit now every year to keep our immunities up.
I certainly don't need more of him. This is the perfect amount.
Yeah, no, they could still go up to Hokkaido, but the thing is that they can only do now two shows in Sapporo and one with Hakodate, and maybe if Katsuo, he used to be a bit of a troublemaker. If things go well with him, he can wrestle in Sapporo.
I will say, speaking of YouTube real quick, before we get back to the shows that were on the Dragon Gate Network, the main event upload from the show on May 23rd was Diamante, Shun, and Hyo versus Kakuta, Daya, and Yamato. Very, very good match.
I am glad that they're willing to throw Yamato in with the D-Courage guys now.
He seemed like a part of the unit. You know, he certainly didn't outshine them by any means. He fit in. They had good chemistry. I really enjoyed that match. I think it might be a generous 4 stars, but I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Hey, given the week that they had in Hokkaido, we give them what they deserve. And, you know, maybe, you know, something on the back end of that tour, you know, finishing out in Iwate, that they deserve a little bit of credit of this. We talked about the Triangle Gate match a little bit on night one. Of course, Natural Vibes new champions KZ Shimizu and Jackie Funky Kamei. That was not the only title match. Night two,
on the Triangle Gate stuff, sorry to cut you off there, but just to be clear,
no worries.
That was night two, and night three was the Brave Gate stuff. But Natural Vibes wins. It's KZ, Jackie, and Shimizu, and a match you said you went 4 stars on.
Yeah, I JFK and Benkei have a little thing going this
yes.
weekend. Like, we grasp at straws to find things that we really enjoy here. This was the first match of the weekend that felt like a legit, like, big match, that they did smart work with KZ taking the heat instead of JFK. I mean, working the hometown. I know Sapporo isn't a Betsu, but it's right next to it. But it really came down to this JFK and Benkei chemistry. I would love to see a special singles match, not on a big five show, just put on a cork and make it the cork and singles match between these two guys, because between this and the throwaway match on night three, I felt like that those two really, on a weekend where we are looking for anything, we had Benkei and Jackie Funky Kamei, and I was really astounded by the chemistry they showed.
So you hit on something that is exactly what I want to talk about, which is the chemistry between Jackie and Ben in this Triangle Gate match. In watching Jackie Funky Kamei continue to rise to the occasion, it really got me thinking about who are the best big match wrestlers in Dragon Gate. And I came up with a top five list. I'm going to give you my list so it gives you time to think about your list. But it really struck me watching Kamei that, hey, this is a guy over and over again. When he's put in a position that matters, yes, he's good in the Korakuen openers. Yes, he's, you know, a rock steady guy in a trio. He can always be, you know, a guiding hand in a match that needs a little bit of help. He's at that point in his career, 3 years into his career. But big match Kamei is something that I don't think you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, or at the very least branding in our own little universe. Not a lot of talk about big match Kamei, but it's a thing that exists and it's a thing that needs to be discussed. So my top five big match wrestlers in Dragon Gate, I'll go 1 through 5 because I think 5 might be my hot take here. Number one, and this is if I need a great match on a Dragon Gate show, I'm turning to Madoka Kakuta number 1, Shun Skywalker number 2, Jackie Funky Kamei number 3, KZ number 4, and my number 5 wrestler. If I need a great match, turn this show around, put something in the notebook kind of match, I think I'm turning to Kai as my 5th wrestler.
I like that. I like that. So I think currently my number one big match wrestler in Dragon Gate is Shun Skywalker. Just if you look at the last 4 years, he has been the person that if we really wanted to count up the COVID era, he's going to be the one that has the most 4.5s or better. After that, I was already thinking Kamei, but when you look at specifically the places that Kamei has shown, it's whenever there's been a title match.
Yes.
It's whenever he has been a focus. The feud he had with SB Kento in 2021. I feel like that people forget, he had a 5-star match at Kobe.
It was my match of the year. My match of the year last year. I didn't have to think twice about it. From the second the match was over, I knew that was going to be the best thing I saw all year.
And when you really like start thinking about that, I mean, other people that I would consider up there, I would normally consider Masaaki Mochizuki up there. He would probably be my 5 because of the M2K Albatross now. Like, I know that if I see Susumu and Kanda and no Junior around, you don't know what you're going to get. You can't count on that anymore. So, Skywalker, Kamei, Kakuta. And you know who quietly had it, what I thought was the sleeper match of the weekend and I almost went notebook on?
Who's this?
Don Fuji.
Interesting. Explain.
Don Fuji, he doesn't get the big profiles much anymore. I mean, that anniversary match, I think we could all agree, unless they're going to go right back to Junior versus Fuji when Junior is back, that's probably going to be the most highlight and shine Don Fuji gets all year. But when you look down the card at someone who is not getting the high profile, but is making the best out of a match one, a match two, a match against the rookies, a Mochi Fuji tag, a work with Yamato, it's Don Fuji.
It's interesting. You know, I found off-putting is not the right word, but this was not to me the showcase weekend for Fuji merely just because he was in the ring with Punch Tominaga twice, and Tominaga was just, yeah. I don't get it. You know, you want to book him in Kobe, cool. You want to book him in, you know, the Arakan tag on Korakuen, sure. You know, there's guys that are hurt, you need to fill the card. There's got to be something better to do on these shows. That was, you know, a 5-minute match with Kai, a 10-minute match with Fuji against Yamato and Mochizuki, in a 5-minute match against Hyo and Kai on the opening night. It's just 20 minutes of Punch Tominaga spread across 3 shows is far too much Punch Tominaga.
And the bigger thing isn't the ring time, Case. It's the fact that he took a seat that could have been going to Daiki Yanagiuchi or someone else.
Yeah, let me look at that that show that followed on the 23rd.
From Iwate?
No, this was from, where's Catswell from?
Oh, Hakodate.
Yeah, Hakodate. Okay, they used the same crew there. I was going to say if Daiki showed up on that show and wasn't on the Akaido weekend, I was going to be pretty pissed. But even on the Iwate show, Daiki's on there. So I don't get that at all.
Yeah, and it's something where, like, I acknowledge that as a non-native fan, there's probably some sort of context that that culturally that maybe aids to Punchamanaga's fandom. But when it, like, in a scenario like this, no one was going to buy a single ticket. And I'm willing, like, if somehow this goes to people in Sapporo who understand English and are a Dragon Gate fan and bought a ticket to Punchamanaga, I will pay you back your ticket, because I am that certain that no one there paid a ticket to see Punchamanaga.
I think you'll be able to keep your money.
Yeah, and that's not to say that Daiki Yanagiuchi would have sold tickets. There's no reason to believe that. But Punchamanaga is Punchamanaga. He's been a known quantity since 2011. And when you have people on this roster, and I know that there has been injuries with the future kids and the rookies that have made things a little bit more difficult with this, but Kaito Nagano, why not have Kaito Nagano in this? Kaito Nagano would have gotten more out of those 20 minutes of ring time being there than not. That's the way I look at this case, that these were 20 minutes that could have gone to Kaito Nagano.
Oh, completely. It's a bummer. So your list is Shun, Kamei, Kakuta, Fuji, and who's number five?
I thought I said Fuji was five for me.
Who? Give me your list again.
It was, I'm trying to think right now. I'm blanking on it. It was Shun, Kamei, Kakuta, Fuji.
Oh, you said Mochizuki.
Mochizuki Fuji. Yeah, Mochizuki Fuji.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. All right. Well, I would like for people on the Discord to let us know their top five. Mike, what are your thoughts on La Estrella, his big weekend?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The person who inhabits La Estrella's mask, I don't want to belabor the point from last week, obviously very talented. This Brave Gate match was as good as it was because it was not doing La Estrella things. But I still, this might be like one of the biggest misses character wrestle wise in Dragon System in the last decade. It's just very clear that this wrestler in this gimmick does not work, and they're gonna keep on trying.
It's really hard watching Estrella team with Minorita and seeing Minorita just do everything better than Estrella. That match on the second show was a bad look.
That Cancun tornado that Minorita did to the floor and landed on his feet.
ACH had a really good version of that dive, but Minorita might, it's slightly different, but it's the same idea and spirit, and he might do it better.
Yeah, so I was 3.5 on the match. It was not a bad match. It was, and to be clear, because of the style they worked, this was not a Jason Lee Carey job, because there was a lot of grounded stuff with Minorita and Estrella. And as we've seen in the week since he's been back, that's the stuff he's actually really good at. His clutch pin that he did did before this was solid. The way that he gets to the S stretch looks awesome. Why is he still flying at all?
So watching Estrella matches right now is kind of fascinating, because they haven't fully abandoned the original idea of the gimmick, which is that he's this crazy high flyer, but he clearly wants to introduce more grappling into his arsenal. So what you get with a La Estrella match now is you get a high flying start, and then you get this drastic shift into grappling, and it's not seamless. It's like, okay, that was chapter one, this is chapter two, And then you have, you know, the third chapter, this closing stretch, which in the case of the Jason Lee match, I lean a little bit more towards, it's a Jason Lee carry job. I don't think Estrella is looking that clean, that smooth in the ring with any other wrestler, with rare exception. I think that match looked so good and got so good by the end of it because of Jason. But nevertheless, it's like this weird two-faced character that Estrella has now, where there's the old version of him that seems to not be a success, and then this new version of him that he's experimenting with. And seamless is the word that comes to mind. It's not seamless. It is kind of jarring to watch him wrestle and try things out in the ring.
And that's not to say that I'm mad that this has happened.
No, this was a productive weekend, just because you always have to take stock of what you have.
Right. Yeah, you take stock of what you have. They've done this before. Like, Tozawa came back for a Kobe World in the middle of his excursion to team with Nosawa Rongai. It's just kind of the things that happen here. I do like watching wrestlers figure themselves out. That has been a joy, but it's frustrating because we know that more likely than not, he's just doing this of his own volition. There's not going to be a direction in this, because we know that this is an Ultimo character, and unless things really go down south, they're not going to give up with it. So it's still doing flying spaceman drops that look okay, doing the Stuka splash, that's fine. And then doing those in matches where Minorita does incredible Cancun tornado variants. And you're set here watching this and you go, wait, which one of these is supposed to be the high flying luchador?
Yes. Yep, completely. You know, I think for as much bad stuff was that was on this weekend of shows, I think it's worth sitting down and watching Jason versus Estrella, because you can see, okay, this is what the La Estrella character could be. And maybe this is the peak. Maybe there's a better version out there. But, you know, I don't think if this was Estrella versus UT, somebody we both like and respect, I don't think the match is coming together the way it did. It's not happening with a Hyo. It's not happening with a Minorita. It's not happening with a Daya. I think Estrella, and this is good, they were showcasing their strengths and hiding their weaknesses. I think Estrella was put in a position to succeed wrestling Jason. By the end of it, the match I thought was very good. Like I said, it's worth people watching, but you talk about wrestlers, you know, how exciting it is to watch them find themselves. And when it's Yoshiki Kato, who's still down with an eye injury, and it's Kaito Nagano, who is MIA here, even when it's Rhea Fuda, who we've seen have immense potential, even if his body is his biggest opponent, his greatest adversary, Estrella, you just kind of go, oh, is that it? Is that all Estrella's got? Because that felt like the peak, and that was, you know, that was good, but it wasn't up to the heights of a normal Dragon Gate wrestler.
Yeah, and it's something that I just, it's hard for me to like be indignant. It's hard to me to go like, well, how are you mismanaging this? Because it's just, I know that that we watched him figure things out, that ultimately, unless cooler minds prevail and they go like, hey, he can keep the mask, and he can still be Estrella, like, but let's drop, we've already dropped the alien aspect, we've already kind of made it clear that, like, yeah, that was a cute gag here, but like, let's let him be La Estrella the wrestler, unless they like really just decide to perhaps unmask him, perhaps go like, all right, I'm going to be this. There's not really, at least for me, like emotional, like there's no reason for me to get emotionally invested whatsoever, because I know that that this is a scenario that's not worth investing in.
So is there a realistic scenario in which Estrella goes back to Mexico, which is by our understanding where he's going to go, he goes back to Mexico, and the next time he's in Japan, that character is gone, and he's debuting as just another Japanese wrestler on the Dragon Gate roster?
I would be really tempted to do that.
I would certainly, if I was in the room, I'd be kicking the tires on, are we sure this isn't the best outcome? Are we sure he can't come back with Takuma Nishikawa and almost replay the Ben Minorita success story, the Big and Little, the Robin Big, do that, but with Nishikawa and Estrella unmasked just as another wrestler.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, there's a lot of justification there. I mean, you could even, like, play this off like how UT, you can do this, like, kind of as, like, an homage to UT that is, oh, no, he left in the middle of the night, and then we stopped hearing results from Estrella. We never heard back from
him. He went to space.
Yeah, he went to space. But look, Takuma Nishikawa is back, and he found a friend.
It just seems there like it's never going to get better than this Jason Lee match. And that's not to say that he's a bad wrestler by any means, but
look, he shows a lot of talent in the things that he's trying out. Like, that's the sad thing about this case, is he actually might be pretty good at Yave.
This was a weekend where, again, the most successful part of this weekend was they spent three shows building up La Estrella to a title match with Jason Lee, where I thought the crowd was fairly into it, and the match was very good, and Estrella showed a certain level of fire, and I just feel like this is the best it's going to get.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get another, like, dead or alive from last year, or 2 years ago at the very least.
No, it's it's a really puzzling character, and you know, the thing that I've always tried to emphasize to people, because we talked about this with the class of 2016, where there was, you know, Shun and Ben and Yoshioka, and all of a sudden there was this Katsumi Takashima kid, and there was Hyo, and we're like, oh my God, they have five rookies. This is incredible. And as we've gone through this next crop of guys, starting with SB Kento and Kamei, into the future classes, you know, Riki Hashi gone, Shoya Sato gone. Who was the kid that debuted alongside Kikuta? Sora Fuchikawa, gone. We have all of these question marks surrounding some of these younger guys and where they're going to end up. And Estrella is somehow perhaps the weirdest of that group. Like, Riki Hashi was showing great potential. I loved the guy as a wrestler. I wanted to see where he was going to go. And he said, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. And that somehow makes more sense than the entire career of La Estrella.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what it is about the person behind the mask that Ultimo decided, nope, you got to be this. This is your character. I've chosen it. It's you.
It's not the way I would have drawn things up.
No, that is for sure. I'm looking at my notes for this weekend that we had, Case, in Hokkaido, and I'm kind of left with a little bit of, not nostalgia for this, but I come away from this weekend in a lot of ways thinking about when Hokkaido felt like something. Like, this was the place where people figure themselves out. And it's kind of depressing to think that maybe La Estrella has figured himself out, but he's not going to be able to pursue that.
Well, I don't want to thrash on the tour as a concept, because prior to this weekend, this has been a set of shows that I look forward to because they deliver. I always pointed, the first time they ran this building, that three shows in December of 2020, some of my favorite spot shows Dragon Gate has ever run. This is a building that, despite how ugly it might look, has been able to produce some magic over the years. Normally the shows just have a greater purpose. And again, you know, unfortunately, the purpose this weekend was La Estrella.
Yeah, and I think I'm ready to put a bow on last week in case. We had an interesting YouTube upload, not in a normal spot.
I'm going to cut you off again. I want to talk about one more thing. I do deeply apologize. Okay. I am so sorry.
No worries. What's up?
The main event of Night 3 was awesome. I want to talk about it.
Yep. No, let's talk about this three-way match. It was Deke Courage versus Gold Class versus Z-Bratz. Oh, yeah. It was Natural Vibes versus Deke Courage versus Z-Bratz, KZ, Shimizu, Strong Machine J, D-Courage, the Kakuta, Yoshioka, and Daya, Shun, Diamante, and Hyo. It was Kakuta finishing off Strong Machine J with a lariat after one of the stronger House of Fire finishing stretches I can remember in recent memory.
Off the top of your head, unless it's in front of you, then just tell me, but do you know how long this match went?
Off the top of my head, I think it went 12 minutes.
Okay, yeah, it went 12:53. I'm shocked by that. I thought this match was longer, and I mean that in a complimentary way, because it felt like a really big main event by the time things were all over.
Yeah, it really did the build really kind of remarkable. And for a match that has Zebratz, where there was a lot of just general, just sleaze Zebratz style wrestling.
Too like there was much.
There was at one point in the weekend where in four straight matches, there were three crowd brawls or across four matches, there were three crowd brawls. Like it just became kind of just ever present. I like the fact that like they got that brawl out of the way, and then it shifted into the next gear. And it's really like Strong Machine J is the person I want to talk about here.
Go for it.
Strong Machine J is booking since Dead or Alive, where he is that they've made it very clear that like Shun Skywalker does not believe he is on their level and should not be a part of the Big Six. He is dropping all the falls here, and he's still firing up. And it's something that I think is going to be really interesting to see if they are going in that Shun SMJ route, because if we're really trying to pan for gold in this weekend, they've continued Strong Machine J's status as the sixth. And I thought they did that in a real fascinating manner in this main event, where he had his moments and he was going for like big bobs, but eventually Kakuta just rolled him over in the closing stretch.
Yeah, I find Strong Machine J to be incredibly interesting on a show in, show out basis, because he is, like I said earlier when I was breaking down sort of where the Big Six are and their motivations and my interest levels towards them, Strong Machine J, no matter what match he's in, right now he's in a position where he's trying to prove himself. And it's, you know, both a storyline thing and even, you know, you look at people in our Discord that when the Big Six, this new Big Six were announced, they went, you know, Strong Machine J, are you sure he's on their level? That is seeped into real life ramifications of the promotion, and he's wrestling like he's trying to prove himself, and it's great. He's entering every match with a higher level of intensity than most, and it's really paying off.
Yeah, and it was something where I felt like with him and Kakuta in that stretch, that however they're going to get to Kobe World, if it's going to be Kakuta Shun 3s, if it's going to be a Big Six match or not, they have, I feel like, between these two, I feel like Strong Machine J has maybe his best chemistry within the Big Six with Kakuta. And I know that he already had his first challenge. I would love to see what a longer singles match between these two could be.
You know, I cut you off earlier and you were talking about that. Can you sort of walk me through your six-way match idea? Is it a cage match, or is it just like a kind of, you know, not to say a straight six-way, but a straight six-way?
I think it is something that I don't think you can heat up in 6 weeks enough unless we get some real mass gripping, you know, like unless like Strong Machine J, everyone is just like going after that. And then in response, everyone's going after Shun. You have to have the justification. They are now operating with the feud has to present itself. I don't think you can get the new Big Six there in 6 weeks.
I feel really forced. I think it would do them more harm than good.
Right. So straight six way, I think you have the intermingling, and it kind of just plays off of all the various just like Kakuta and Yoshioka. Like Yoshioka does not seem super happy about the state of things and how 2023 has gone for him. Shun against Strong Machine J, that has been a vociferous kind of thing. That has been like the one plot point coming out of the Big Six so far. You have Benkei and Shun, how the way that they're linked, all the Mochizuki Dojo guys, you have enough intermingling there. And the fact that this is the big tent pole for the new era is going to be the first Kobe World after they declare this era. And you should put your six guys up front. I mean, you have enough people there that have main evented Kobe World that it's not a completely foreign and scary and untested main event. Yes, you are putting a six way in your biggest match of the year, but we've spent the last 3 weeks, Case, trying to figure out this main event, and unless a lot of sponge money is going into New Japan's pocket, this is the one that makes the most sense.
God, if only there were three shows that could make all of this much clearer. What a fucking waste of time. Let me say, in regards pivoting here just a little bit to Shun Skywalker again, you know, I have been advocating, if Mochizuki Jr. is healthy, doing Junior and Father Mochy versus Kano and Kondo for the Twin Gate belts at World. And given that M3K is wrestling for the belts at Cork, and I still think that's on the table, if for some reason it's not, I know it's technically a heel versus heel matchup, but I watched Shun and Diamante in this match, and their chemistry as a tag team is, it's so unbelievable. And it's a shame, for as good as they were, that Shun and Kai were in Rey de Parejas this year, because we need a month of heavy hitting focused Shun and Diamante teaming with one another, because they consistently blow me away.
And we didn't really get the big title run. We got essentially 2 months.
Yeah, they had a spot in this match where Diamante, I mean, it's a spot that's happened in every wrestling match ever. You know, Dragon Daya charges at Diamante. Diamante flips him up over his back, and Dragon Daya lands on the apron. And Shun Skywalker comes off the ropes with such velocity and big boots Daya in the face in a second, to a point where you can fully suspend your disbelief, because Daya is shielded by Diamante, and the second Diamante moves out of the way, he is getting kicked in the face by Shun Skywalker. Their chemistry blew me away. I also have to mention the Madoka Kakuta hot tag, all capital letters there. That is becoming a thrill to watch in every match that he's in. This one capped off by him back body dropping KZ over the top rope and onto the other 7 guys. I have to mention that spot. It was quite thrilling.
And it was something with that hot tag that it's become like death and taxes. When as soon as Kakuta gets that tag, we're like, okay, we know how this is going to go here. And it was such an amazing, because it was right from that hot tag into the closing stretch with Strong Machine J. And it was something that back body drop was insane.
It was insane because I didn't see it coming.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It's like, oh, he's going over the top rope, or he's going to get a shotgun, like the slingshot headbutt. Like I thought it was gonna be one of those things. It's like, nope. KZ is going to be getting vaulted into the air onto 6 other people.
Really good stuff. I went 4.25 with this main event. I was just under the assumption it was elimination rules. So when Strong Machine J got pinned, I was rubbing my hands together, like, all right, Z-Brats versus D-Courage, here we go, something's gonna happen. And the perfect way to cap off a Kaido, the one time I wanted more wrestling, the match ended. And I was just like, all right, it's, you know, 4.25. And had it gone another 5 minutes or so, I'm sure I would have gone even higher on it. It was really, really good wrestling. I would say, look, this weekend is easy. Even though I gave Hulk versus KZ 4 stars, it was a begrudging 4 stars. I did not want to give it 4 stars. I would skip all of night one. I'd watch the main event of night two, which is the Triangle Gate match. And then I'd watch Jason and Estrella and the main event from night three, and then put these shows in the rear view.
Yeah, the only other stuff I would add, that if you're already on, you already have it pulled up, Strong Machine J versus Diamante was a fun little number. I enjoyed that. I really liked Mochy Fuji versus Yama Hulk. Like, this is the right use of BB Hulk in 2023 in his hometown. Put him in there with Mochy Fuji. But the rest of that, I would completely co-sign.
Strong Machine J versus Diamante was like a really good TV match. I enjoyed that for what it was. The Mochy Fuji match did not connect with me the way that it did for you. But I was down on just the entire idea of this weekend. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I guess the thing that got me with this one is that Hulk does have like a couple just bumps he should not be taking in this match. That, like, you would think that he would stop like twisting when he's doing flip bumps in 2023.
That's fair.
If I was someone who had the neck issues that he has had through his career, that's the thing I'm cutting out, is you're not having me twist in air.
It's why at the end of the KZ match I went, all right, put it in the notebook. He works really hard still. Hard to a fault almost. But BB Hulk, when he is in a featured match, he still gives it his all. And sometimes it's very impressive. 4-0 Knights, by the way. They just scored again.
Yeah, God, man. I almost pointed attention. I was like, oh, this is when I turn off the game. And I was like, you know what? I would just be putting on Gleet. So
the remote is too far away from me. I'd like to turn on the Celtics Heat game, but I'm stuck with this until we're done recording. So let's talk about some YouTube uploads.
Yeah, so it was not on YouTube, which had Hakodate and Iwate that we've talked about before this, but the Gaara channel, it is a weird channel to find. It's something that as soon as you find this channel, just immediately subscribe to it so you don't have to deal with this again, because last year they put up all the title matches from Kobe World. This year, they put up a special match from 2005, didn't they, Case?
They did. This is one of the Pantheon-level Dreamgate matches, one of those matches that, you know, if Mike and I were going to burn you a DVD set of Dragon Gate 101, these are the matches you need to see if you're going to call yourself a fan. Masaki Mochizuki versus Ryo Saito from 2005 would certainly be on that list.
And it is something that Jay has a little bit of an explainer about it, but we're talking about 2005, which is after a very weird first fall. You lose a lot of people as the calendar year. You have people that were also on the way out at this time. And Ryo Saito, for about a 20-month period, felt like that he took the bull by the horns and he felt like he was going to be the next thing. And it really kind of started a little bit before this Dreamgate match, but it was something that this was the match, like, Case, as you wrote about with Rey de Parejas 2003 and the backslide and Kinki Horiguchi. This was that for Ryo Saito.
Completely. You know, if you ever watch Dragon Gate's 2005 TV in order, which, you know, I wish they had an over-the-top streaming service that would provide such a thing, but they don't. If you ever watch 2005 Dragon Gate in order, the first show of the year, which is one of my favorite Dragon Gate shows ever, Ryo Saito finally beats his arch nemesis, Milano Collection AT, in the main event. Thrilling match. And the rest of the year, the main event focus is Ryo Saito proving himself to be on the level of a Shima or a Mochizuki or a Magnitude Kishiwada, whoever it is. It's very similar to Strong Machine J's current story. And even though he loses this match to Mochizuki, he ends up pinning Shima in a singles match over the summer that when he wins, it feels like a monstrous deal. He, of course, becomes Dreamgate champion early 2006. It all kind of culminates there. But Saito versus Mochizuki, it's, you know, look, it's another great Masaki Mochizuki match. Just add it to the list. But it really, it's a special match given the time and place, but you can still parachute in and go, God, this was great. And this YouTube upload, which we'll throw in the description of the show here, HD crystal clear footage, which the version I had of this previously was certainly not. And this match is full. It's not clipped. And I think we only lost, you know, 2 or 3 minutes maybe in the airing that aired on Gaiora in 2005, but it's still nice to have this uncut and in full.
Yeah, it's one of the things about Dragon Gate Gaiora, the Dragon Gate Network, and all that. It's so frustrating for me is, Case, remember when the Darkness Dragon and Dragon Kid Apuesis match got posted up there? And when it did, it was something that I think that whatever version of Absolutamente that I had, and here's the insane thing about me, Case. One of the many insane things about me, but I'll give you this one this week. I think I have 4 different versions of the Mask versus Mask match, and they are all, each time I try to find a new place that had it for the longest time, I was trying to find one that was a better resolution. I was hoping one that was not as deep in the generations of the VHS rips or tape there. And then they go and they post crystal clear video when they upload this here. And I think Jay talked about this on air on an episode when I asked them about this, but they have all the masters and Gaiora is responsible with all the stuff. So it's not that this is an HD thing, even though there's a chance that they had HD cameras in 2005. HD is, Japan had HD cameras in the 90s, but the thing is that this is from the original master, so there's no degradation, there's no generational artifacting. It is crystal clear. It is just as if, Case, you were able to get the right cable to plug it straight in, playing it right from the tape. It is some of the stuff that I wish other promotions was it would took the care to care about their history this way. Well, Gaiora as the broadcaster of Toriumon and then Dragon Gate, they have the entire library and they took care of it. It's just piecemealing us this stuff, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So Saito versus Mochizuki is now on YouTube, and as of the time everybody's listening to this, the debut of BB Hulk, Hulk versus Susumu from, again, early 2005. That match was heavily clipped when it was aired on TV in 2005. It looks like we are going to get the full version of that as well, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to have the whole like intro with Magnum and everything on it.
It would be nice. I would like to see that.
Yep. Case, we spent a lot of time dealing with some unhappy past Dragon Gate. Are you ready to look for the future to close out this week?
Yeah, real quick. Can you hear that dog barking in the background?
No,
okay,
not
I'm gonna
at all.
Lose my fucking mind when we're done here, because this dog does not live in my apartment building. I think it lives like a block away from me, and I hear it every night now, and it's going nuts tonight. Anyways, let's go through this Osaka show.
Man, first I deal with the dog next door in my Airbnb. Now you have this one.
This thing has a vicious, like it would eat a child bark to it. And I have such a low tolerance for dogs anyways. The only one I've ever liked is my girlfriend's current dog. And that dog is a sweetheart. She does nothing wrong. But look, you know me. Every other dog can kick rocks. Pudge being the exception. Pudge and Freckles, the only two good dogs I've ever met. I say that because Rich Kreitch's dogs hate me. We do not get along whenever I'm at Rich's place, so I can't even throw those guys in the mix. But this is some bullshit that I'm dealing with now. I'm glad it's not coming through on mic as we run out the episode with an Osaka preview here.
Let's hear it for the low power close-upness of Shure microphones.
Absolutely.
For that. So they're in Osaka on the 28th. It will be a 6 p.m. local time start, 5 a.m. on the east, 2 a.m. on the west, 9 Greenwich Mean Time, Dragon Gate Network. And this is a interesting card. Having a debut really adds a lot to it. Just going down the card, opener, Natural Vibes versus Unaffiliated, KZ, Jason Lee, Jackie Funky Kamei versus Don Fuji, Ginki Horiguchi, and Kagetora. Match 2, Takashi Yoshida and Problem Dragon versus Kai and Ishin. Match 3, Ryoya Tanaka's debut match, Yamato versus Ryoya Tanaka. Match 4, M2K, the original members of M3K, Masaki Mochizuki, Susumu Mochizuki, Yasushi Kanda, go up against this fascinating, almost Shen M2K team of Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, but you also have Shuji Kondo there as well. The aforementioned Big Boss Shimizu and Strong Machine J versus Shun Monte is the semi-main event, and the main event is D-Courage versus Gold Class with Minorita.
I told everybody in November, after the airing of the This Is Dragon Gate documentary that aired on Gaiora, which is now on the Dragon Gate Network, pay attention to this Ryoya Tanaka kid, because it's an hour-long broadcast that highlights Dragon Kid, Coach Minora, Yamato, Yuki Yoshioka, you know, the stars of Dragon Gate, and they cut out a little five-minute section for Tanaka. He's the only graduate from the class of 2023, is the only debut they'll have this year. He's strikingly handsome, at least in my opinion, and he got a little feature in this documentary. He's wrestling Yamato in his debut match. Don't ignore this. I don't even know if this is something that's noteworthy or not, but look at the show poster that Gaiora has on their website. It's not Madoka Kakuta in the photo, it's Tanaka. This is something that can't be ignored. I'm not saying he's going to be a supernova. He's not going to beat Yamato here. Let's all calm down with our expectations. But this is a kid that you can get in from the very ground floor, and I think you're going to be able to, and I think you should.
Yeah, and we don't take a lot from the future exhibition matches, but he has at least a look that in this company will get him far, and he has... The chop battle he had with Kagetora was really good.
It was really good.
So, yeah. So at the very least, like my one hope here, I need to watch This Is Dragon Gate. I need to make time for that. But my one hope here is Yamato, because Yamato had like a pretty feisty chop battle in Hokkaido. Like that was like the only notable thing that happened was Yamato decided to go really hard on chops against who was he chopping against? I'm looking through my notes. My handwriting's awful.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but Ryoya Tanaka will be an interesting thing with this. I would really Big Boss Shimizu and Strong Machine J versus Shun Skywalker and Diamante. That match, I know we talked about how, like, what's the deal with Shimizu? And what'd you do this last week with him and Strong Machine J? It's going to be interesting to see Shumante against one of the bigger possible tag teams they could face.
I'm sure the match will be good. I don't know. I find this card to be as off-putting as some of the Akaido ones. I just, you know, what's the point of any of this? I don't think the direction is Kakuta versus a guy in Gold Class. So why is that headlining here? You know, why is Shimizu not wrestling D Courage if they're going to do that match? I don't know. I'm sure the show will be fine, but I'm not excited about it on paper.
Yeah, and with how June is lining up, those Corkins are going to have to do some lifting for what's happening on July 2nd, Kobe World. Case, I think we have mined the stone for as much as we can for this week, but was there anything else you want to touch on as the stars are really, really bumming me out, man? I was really hoping for this to be a song. We did not put the skate in the crease in 99 for this to happen.
No, the only thing I'll give a quick plug here. If you have not heard it yet, I was on the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast last week with Jesse Collings. That is available its own feed, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, and it's on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. If you thought this episode was negative, give that one a listen. It was far more pessimistic just about the future of wrestling, in-ring trends, talent development, where wrestling goes from here. And Jesse and I both have a lot of concerns over the future, but the feedback we have gotten on it has been greatly appreciated, just in terms of the way we broach the subject. So thank you to anybody that listened to that. And if you have not, I would recommend giving that a listen. I had a lot of fun doing that with Jesse. I've talked about him on this show before. I think he's one of the most interesting minds in wrestling media right now, and I'm glad we got to sit down and do that.
Yeah, no, it is an incredible podcast. I saved it. I had to ride back and forth from a ranch this weekend, Case, and hearing y'all just light up people and light up the U.S. indie scene made me, I actually felt a little proud hearing that.
Yeah.
You know,
wrestling talent development is not going to get better on the independent level until something drastically changes, and we all just have to accept that.
Yeah, but it is an incredible episode. And Jesse, I enjoy hearing Jesse's Dragon Gate takes. Like to the extent that I'm like, well, we're looking at Kobe World and Case and I, we're trying to figure out how we're tackling this thing. It's like, maybe it would be I would be fascinated by this. So maybe listeners would be too. Getting a perspective from someone who's basically brand new in Dragon Gate as it goes into Kobe World as a different kind of preview would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I talked about this on the show. I feel like the Dragon Gate fan base is the opposite of gatekeeping. It is, please watch this. This is so good. Why aren't more people watching this? And the more the merrier. So I enjoy Jesse's comments on Dragon Gate, even if I highly disagree with some of them. It's always nice to have a fresh voice in the Discord thread, replying to us on Twitter, and just listening in general. And Mike, that is all I've got this week before I go yell at a stranger's dog.
Yep. Speaking of that Discord, that's one of the best places to reach out, talk about the show. We have both a channel and the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network a layer, and then also the Dragon Gate sub-channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord is probably my favorite place in history to talk about Dragon Gate other than on a call with Case Lowe. So it's worth checking out that as well. We're on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fuji Heya. That's it for Open the Voice Gate. Thanks for listening to us this week. If you get a chance, please go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, rate and review. It's the best way for new listeners to discover Open the Voice Gate. But for Case, I'm Mike. That's going to do it for this week on Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week talking about Osaka. Take care, everyone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.